Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ding-a-ling-a-ling.
Here we are in the Media Project, a half hour of commentary and analysis on the media issues of the week, some days even some insight into issues that you might care about. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Yo,
you doing okay?
Yeah.
Does he ever say, I'm doing great, let's go?
It's not the way.
I don't think I've ever
It's not
that.
The way I was raised.
Yeah.
I was raised by a mother who, when asked, you know, how are you feeling? The answer was,
Okay, that is Judy Patrick, Vice President of the New York Press Association, former editor of the Gazette.
I am doing great.
There you go.
Let's go.
Ready to chew up something here. And Rosemary Armeo, investigative journalist and UAlbany professor. How
Hello,
you doing?
Happy to be here.
Yeah, great to see you, absolutely. By the way, we always encourage listeners to write to us. media@wamc.org is how you can suggest topics or send us your reactions. And here's a guy, Steve, who is a regular listener, says that after many years of inviting you folks to our Sunday dinner table, wasn't that nice?
Hmm. What are we having?
WMC. Well, what's up? What are you serving, Steve? We've noticed there's a disproportionate amount of time devoted to one segment of the media, and that is newspapers. He says he likes them, buys them all the time, but he thinks that we ought to pay more attention to broadcast and cable television and, of course, the web. Of course, when I say newspapers, I mean the web, because that's where we reach people nowadays. So anyway, we should talk about other things.
I get that in journalism classes, too, and all of our background, except for Alan's, maybe is in newspapers, so that's reasonable. But the truth is, there is no basis for any other news without newspapers, and that is still true. There's no internet without content developed by newspapers. There's very little broadcast that comes independent of newspaper work, and that remains true. And that's one of the dangers of the death of newspapers.
Well, I would like just to say that I think that the letter writer has a very good point. and one of the things that has developed is over the years, there's a certain amount of arrogance that comes from all of you newspaper people.
And we do it, Alan.
Well, I'm not through yet, Rosemary.
I know. I was trying to undercut it a little.
So there's a certain arrogance and a sense of entitlement on the part of the newspaper guys and women who think that they have the inside track and that they can spit down the hill at everybody else. I think that's undeniable.
Now, let's spit up the hill a little bit here, because I think the letter writer is right that the media that we're not talking about as much is the problem. The cable news shows, the electronic media, that's the problem that we're having nowadays. The newspapers are the ones that are reliable, reputable ones, and the problem is maybe the ones we're not talking about.
Of course you think that, Judy, because...
Of course, I'm right again.
And of course it just shows the kind of arrogance that you people all engage in.
I'd be happy to surrender if you could name for me, say, five pieces that have been done by broadcast in the past year, not originated in print. You can't.
One can see all kinds of good stuff, for example, that NPR does now.
Oh, now that's true. Yes. NPR does great, and we try to make note of that on the show.
Yeah.
I think NPR is terrific.
Right.
I think PBS is too. I think, you know, there are lots of...
You're contradicting yourself?
No. What you're saying, good stuff is not the same as originated. I worked for years for investigative reporters and editors, and the broadcasters came to us and
which is an organization, just make clear, IRE is the largest group of reporters, of journalists in the country.
Right.
And Rosemary used to run it.
Yeah, and they would come to us and get copies of our what investigations are done in the past year, and then they would bring those to life. So the media definitely is great, and if you compare print and broadcast, that's extremely powerful. But I'm talking about stuff that originates with broadcasters, new material, investigative material. I don't know. It's still newspapers.
I think it's wonderful that this letter writer has had the guts and the ability to write to us and
so,
tell us the truth.
You know, he's so right, and so we should pay attention to when new sets are built on local broadcast outlets, and we should talk about how their hair has been colored.
And about the revealing clothing that the women always have to wear.
Yeah.
Wait a second.
I've often wondered about that. Maybe now that you've raised that, you can speak
Let's
to
Let's go into uncharted territory.
Do we know that the women are literally told wear shorter skirts or sit under the glass table? Do we know that, or are we just deciding that? I mean, in this age of Me Too, you're telling me a producer has the guts to tell a woman what to wear?
I can tell you that I imagine if I walked into Rex Smith's newsroom, we would not see a lot of women in, not skimpy attire, but we would see women in comfortable clothing.
Because it helps them to run after people and, you know, do their job.
But so it's so interesting, though, that in this age, when anybody can file a lawsuit and does and get into the papers and say I was, you know, put upon by my superior, somebody would say to an anchor, you have to dress in this way?
I don't know that it's actually done that way. Maybe if we had somebody on the show to that point who comes from a cable television outlet, they could explain that to us. I think that there's just kind of an understanding that you need to present yourself well. The euphemism for it may be that.
It's just a coincidence that all those anchors on Fox are blonde and in short skirts and sleeveless dresses. It's just, you know, a fluke, style, fashion.
I'm not only, I like to attack Fox, it's always fun, but I'm talking about all of the cable.
CNN, operations. Name any of them.
Yeah.
I think none of us have put any makeup on before we arrived here today.
I'm not going to get there because I just want you to know that you don't need any makeup, Judy.
When I was a young reporter, I was working for Newsday, a big newspaper with 600 people in the newsroom. We launched a nightly newscast, and our anchor was a 320-pound guy who'd won two Pulitzer Prizes, Bob Green.
Oh, yeah.
Rosemary knows him well. A terrific investigative journalist who, in the twilight of his career, became a nightly news anchor. And I was the head news writer, and I was out on the street reporting every day and producing. But I have to tell you, as we first launched the newscast, I went into the men's room and I was dabbing makeup on, as I had been taught to do by the producer we had brought in from a local TV station. And this cops reporter, Tom Demoretsky, walks in, old-fashioned guy who once threatened to throttle me because I was whistling in the newsroom. He said, I'm gonna throw a spike at you if you keep doing that. He said, yeah, everybody had spikes on their desks still. And apparently it's bad luck to whistle in a newsroom.
Yeah, I've heard that.
That is one of the old sayings.
That.
Anyway, Demoretsky walked in as I'm putting on makeup, and he says, oh, my God, what the is going on around here?
Well, you know, it is true that when I went to work, I did about 30 years altogether on TV around here, NBC and CBS, every night. And one of these places I went in and they said, we're going to give you a lesson in color, what colors you have to wear on your clothing. And also, we want you to use all that makeup. So I started to use the makeup, and I'd come home, and my wonderful wife, Roselle, would say to me, you look like you're a corpse.
Said with all the love in my heart, honey. Yes.
Yeah, so that's one of the points, is a lot of that is about appearance, and they get caught up in that. But again, most of the Americans do get their news from broadcast.
Okay, so let's put it on the table. Let's put it on the table. I've discussed this before to great objection, but most of the women who are on the cable networks are quite extraordinary. They're brilliant, but they are also beautiful. How do they do that? Is beauty the Rosemary? Let the record show. Rosemary's put her hand over her eyes.
Yeah, this is not a conversation that I think I want to participate.
Oh well, I think it's very important.
Okay, well you guys do it. I'll sit here and hold my head.
Well, no, it's a very important thing because what it does is it shows a certain amount of prejudice that women who are not beautiful but who are intelligent don't rise to that. Now, people will find some exceptions, very few, to that rule, but for the most part, I think I'm right, and I don't think it's right.
Maybe they don't choose that line of work. Maybe they would rather do something that is a bit more substantive. Maybe that's their
choice.
Like
newspapers.
Yeah. I mean, it could be, but
it is.
So it might be useful to have somebody who is an executive producer in TV actually talk honestly. I think it'd be very hard for them to be real honest about it.
Or maybe they could write in.
We do know that when Roger Ailes was doing Fox, he made many sexist remarks about how women should dress, how they should sit, that kind of thing. And went on.
You know, we should say here, this is a moment for us to pay tribute to Ed Daig, who just died. Ed Daig was the longtime anchor of the NBC affiliate in New York's Capital Region. Before that, I believe he worked for, wasn't he sixth?
Worked for the CBS affiliate.
And Ed was a very smart guy.
Very smart.
Very capable interviewer and had a lot going for him. Most of his work, though, involved reading from a teleprompter. And that is not to denigrate Ed, because when he would get into an interview, I've stood alongside him jointly interviewing somebody, and he would come up with terrific questions, really capable guy. So it's not to say that there aren't very capable people. It's just that the medium lends itself to more superficiality, and it lends itself to borrowing, because staffing is such, lends itself to taking a lot of content that is developed by newspapers.
So, you know, Rex, every night for years and years, I was on with Ed Daig virtually every night of the week. And whatever I would say, he would take the other side. He was great at that. And he would just let you have it. And he inevitably won these fights. And
kind of like Rosemary.
I was just going to say, that's where you learned how to do that.
And I have to say that when he died, almost all the media came to see me about my recollections about Ed. Let's see, who didn't come? Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Rex.
Okay, thank you, Steve, our listener, media at WMC.org, for your comment about wishing we talked more about television. And this is probably why we don't do more, because we have less to say about it in favorable terms. But we hope that we will hear from some people in the business.
And while you're on the subject, I want to say one thing. Thank God I'm here.
Right.
Thank the Lord.
We always say that. The editor of Columbia Journalism Review, a man named Kyle Pope, has written what is the cover story of the magazine, which is circulated around the country. His cover story talks very sadly about the fact that disinformation is more significant a problem than it has been. He says that the problem of disinformation has only grown worse in the last year, year and a half, and that he believes that the trends will accelerate. Falsehoods propagated on social media have become increasingly sophisticated. Intentional deception from the White House and elsewhere is more widespread, and journalism's ability to counter bad information with legitimate reporting seems to be getting more limited by the day. Well, that's a pretty depressing outlook, right?
Yeah,
what can you do?
Some of the quotes from this article are just striking. He compares fake news to a out-of-control pathogen in a science fiction movie that has just taken over, and that it isn't something that journalists alone can fix. There's this horrible trend that as you try to shed light on what's true, you end up spreading what's false. The false story takes hold, and people spread that. And how do you stop this? It's always been a problem, of course, fake news, but it's much worse with social media.
But when you have a lying president who makes stuff up as he goes along, it leads other people to do the same thing. It's like he's a bully and other people start to bully. He lies, and he lies all the time, we know that. And then that disinformation takes over.
Yeah, I think we need to step up a little bit here and be crusaders for the truth. For a long time, I didn't want to engage and argue with people about things they posted online. I unfriended people who were posting crazy things. But now, know what I'm doing? I'm stepping up and I'm saying, nope, it's wrong. This is why. And I think people of good conscience need to do that. They need to not be afraid of confronting people who are telling lies and saying, this is wrong. This is what's right. You don't have to do it in a condescending way. You just have to do it and emphasize the point that as citizens, we all need to know the correct information.
But the difficulty is that when you, as Kyle Pope points out, sometimes the more aggressive the reporting gets, these great outlets that are doing significant investigative reporting, the more they assert truthful reporting as opposed to lies, the more damning the critiques from powerful figures on the other side, the less likely some readers are to believe them because they are taking issue with the president, whom they trust more than anyone. And the difficulty is now that there are people who we know they know better than this. We know that they are smarter than this, but they still stand up for the president because he's their president. It's very hard.
There's one other part of this article that rang true to me, which is that as certain journalists try to fight back, and commentators, Rachel Maddow comes to mind, and Don Lemon, they get more and more passionate, almost angry sounding, and then they are labeled as angry. So they're not credible because they're angry. And I notice that on the roundtable, that when people disagree with me, they talk about how I'm shrill or I scream. If they agree with you, it's like, oh, yeah, that's great. I love how passionate you are. So it's even the emotions that you bring to the story are now called into question and are judged as part of the truthfulness of what you say. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. And so we end up complaining, you know, we journalists end up complaining about, for example, social media. And there's a lot to complain about in terms of how Facebook and Twitter and others have approached their work. But the real problem is the propensity of significant players in our society to lie without consequence. And if that were not the case, if we were aggressively confronting disinformation campaigns originating in foreign countries, or if the White House were not perpetrating these disinformation campaigns themselves, then we wouldn't have so much trouble from the platforms because they wouldn't have to contend with this.
And if it wasn't just the White House, it would be easier to deal with. But it is the support structure that the White House has or the president has that they do not knock down the lies. They support the lies, and it's a whole system. And one of my real concerns is, what about this generation of kids that's growing up nowadays? And they have no idea what's right, what's wrong, and the value of telling the truth.
Not only that, you take the utterance from the president's lips that we've talked about many times here, in which he calls the press the enemy of the people. That's a lie, of course, right there. But the fact of the matter is that so many people believe that this is the case that our jobs have become so much harder and you almost can't get over it.
I'm saddened this weekend at news out of Egypt where the dictator Sisi is a very good friend of President Trump, thinks he admires him as a strong man. And they're an online newspaper, the only independent news source in that entire country, Mada Masar, was raided. Their editor was arrested, their files were all taken, and they're scattered. And what that is the state taking over control of the media, and that we admire now. That was not condemned. We don't even make a big deal about it, and yet it's a whole country, a major U.S. ally. More aid goes there than to most other countries in the world, and now they are stomping all over freedom of the press.
What do you guys make of the fact? I mean, every morning I have three or four newspapers delivered to my desk, and I have read them most of the time online.
There he goes talking about newspapers again.
Yep.
Yeah. And I read the New York Post, and I read the Daily News. You would think you were in different universes. I mean, their approach to the truth is the same thing with, MSNBC and Fox. So in terms of objective truth, it's very hard to come by these days because people just say whatever they want, whether it's right or wrong.
Well, we're seeing that in that Ukrainian discredit. It's supposedly Ukrainian theory that they interfered, not the Russians.
Yeah, right.
And it's repeated over and over again, including by the president. Days after the leading expert in the country, Dr. Fiona Hill, said, no, this is right out of the KGB, the new KGB's mouth. And you're still hearing U.S. senators on television talking about it. Unbelievable.
I think it's very important to remember that Putin, the strongman, the dictator in Russia, was at one point the colonel in charge of the KGB.
Yeah, that's not unrelated to what's happening.
No.
But we deal with what is. The reality is quite difficult. You know, maybe one solution, you're tempted to ask for a massive public relations campaign, an advertising campaign to support the value of truth-telling in the media. And at a certain level, Mike Bloomberg is going to provide that. You know, here he's jumped into the presidential race with the largest ad buy in a campaign history, $30 million right off the bat. He's self-financing. What is interesting is that I believe $20 million of that first $30 million is going to be spent in negative ads on Trump. So that may well make a difference. I shouldn't speak in support of a political notion, but I wish that that kind of spending would be directed toward the positive message of truth-telling in the media, because that then would be the longer-range benefit. You know, if you could reinforce the value of paying attention to honest media, that might actually, in the long run, have more impact, right?
Truth-telling does not seem to be the major goal of his own news organization
these
days, Rex.
That's true. The Bloomberg organization is in a difficult situation, but I don't think they're handling this so well. Bloomberg's editor, a guy named Micklethwaite, has said that Bloomberg journalists will not be allowed to investigate Mike Bloomberg, his family, or businesses or charitable endeavors, and that now applies to all of his primary rivals. So Bloomberg will run investigations by other outlets verbatim or in summary form. And so This means that Bloomberg journalists will be able to investigate Trump, although not if Bloomberg wins the nomination. It's a crazy approach for what is a reputable news organization, Bloomberg.
We're going to be seeing whether or not a billionaire spending money, and I like Bloomberg, by the way, but a billionaire spending money can actually buy an election. There's a poll out this morning, and of course it's very early in terms of Bloomberg's entry, would show him at the 2% level in terms of approval, presidential approval. Tom Steyer, another very wealthy man, has had ads on for months buying television time, and that hasn't helped him a bit. So it'll be interesting.
You may be reading about this, but it won't be in Bloomberg's publications. They will not be looking at any of this. And I understand it's a difficult situation for them to be in. You have a guy running for president who also is hiring a whole bunch of journalists. How do you write something negative and then go look for a job later, for that matter? It's all kinds of conflicts of interest. So I get that it's hard. But their decision to not cover at all is an abdication of journalism. Why not go the opposite way and say, we're going to cover the hell out of everybody, including our guy?
Yeah, I'm not concerned so much about Bloomberg's political prospects. I'm concerned about the damage, the potential damage he's going to do to journalism, specifically to his own publication, but also to journalism in general. It's like, you don't choose not to cover. He should just step away and tell his editors and his reporters, cover me as much as you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do what you have to do.
This shows the danger when anybody in the media tries to get into politics. I mean, I think that becoming a media person, you almost take like the priestly vow of chastity. we are not politicians. We do something different. Some years ago, there was a publisher of the Miami Herald, a guy named David Lawrence, who flirted with running for lieutenant governor of Florida. And just the very notion that he might get out there put his reporters in a terrible position.
Of course.
Because they felt that they couldn't really write about the race anymore. And that's at such a low level by comparison to what's going on here. A major news organization hamstrung because its owner didn't take the step that he should have of saying, okay, as Judy says, hands off. I'm going to put this in a blind trust or something. Or I am now disassociating myself from the media company. Go to it, guys.
This is a lesson right out of the Eastern European oligarchs who, whenever they want to shut up a media, they don't kill reporters. They don't buy ads. They just buy the newspaper or the outlet and take it over. And that's the effect of this order on Bloomberg's papers.
And there's this annoying quote in one of the stories I read about Bloomberg in which he says, I don't want the people I pay to write bad things about me. Talk about arrogance.
All right, if you have thoughts on this, media at WAMC.org. Judy Patrick and Rosemary Romeo, Alan Shartok and Rex Smith here talking about media issues of the week. By the way, politicians often go underground when they do face questioning. There is talk nationally about the fact that Mitch McConnell and other members of the GOP leadership are rarely granting interviews. We were talking earlier about John Kennedy, the senator from Louisiana, without naming him. Here's a guy who kind of got himself
very
into
bad misnamed, by the way.
Other John Kennedy. He kind of stoked controversy by making these false claims about Ukraine. So you can see why they avoid questions. But what do you do when you're a journalist and these politicians go underground? They're basically foreclosing the opportunities for the kind of reporting you need to do.
Well, you know, we have a feature here at our public radio station that most people don't, which is called the Congressional Corner, and we talk to everybody. Ms. Stefanik, who has just made a huge imprint on the hearings, we find it very difficult to get her. I think she was on one time. But she will talk to our reporters, and more so now that she's in a little bit of trouble and she's got a close election coming up. But they will do what they think is best, and if that means not subjecting themselves to questions, they say, the hell with you, I'm not going to do it.
I'm not so sure that journalism loses out when these people stop talking. I'll look right at the top guy. Trump hasn't had a formal press conference. Stephanie Grisham has not had a formal press briefing since she took office months ago. And I don't see that reporting on the White House has suffered from that. In fact, it saves you time during the day from listening to outright lies and public relations and going after the news in a different way.
Well, it's just such hypocrisy. This president,
really,
as you know, makes up, says anything that he wants to say. Mm-hmm. He says, for example, they're not giving us a fair shake in these hearings. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, send all your people up here. We'll interview them in the hearings. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that.
Because you're not giving us a fair shake.
You can't have it both ways.
but politicians should return the calls of local reporters. I think when they refuse to talk to local reporters, they're refusing to talk to their constituents because the radio station, the newspaper, the television station, they represent the people.
Yes, yes. That's so foo-foo, Judy.
But that's the truth.
Yes. Well, it is the truth. There's no question about
it. They want to talk to us all the time when they're running for office.
But well, why do you think they don't?
Because the questions are tough. You know, I mean, Elise Stefanik is a perfect example. She won't talk to North Country Public Radio or the Post Star of Glens Falls. They're having a terrible time getting to her. So what are you supposed to do about that? If you're trying to be a fair journalist, you're trying to get her point of view, sometimes you end up dipping into your tape files or dipping back into old interviews saying, well, here's what she said here, or here's what she said on Fox News, because she does interviews in Fox News. Like Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, has been on Fox 19 times in the past 3 months, twice on CBS, and that's it. You know, nobody else. Yeah. Same sort of thing for Steve Scalise, the House Minority Whip. 18 times on Fox. He's been on two other Sunday morning shows.
I think you do that reporting exactly in your broadcast or your print. You say routinely does not talk to the Times Union. She doesn't like the coverage. She will talk to Fox. And American citizens get that. That is a knock on them.
Well,
they understand what's happening.
She just did a major interview
on
with
Fox.
Pat Bradley. No, with us.
Oh, Pat Bradley.
Pat Bradley up in the North Country.
Yeah, Pat said she talks to her all the time.
Yeah, she does. And, you know, I mean, I think what they do, Rex was kind enough to mention one of our other public radio stations, a smaller one in the area, North Country Public
Radio. Jiminy Christmas.
North Country Public Radio. But we bring home the goods and we ask the tough questions.
Well, what I was going to add, though, was that part of this is on the citizens, and people do see that they're picking and choosing. And they saw it with Obama, too, may I add, who also shut down a lot of press access.
Especially newspaper access.
Yeah, the hard questions. In Eastern Europe, the view was, why should they talk to you? Who are you that they should talk to you?
And Tricky Nixon, he said, I don't want to see those people in the White House again. Don't let the Washington Post in. I don't want them in the White House.
And supposedly, this White House has canceled subscriptions to all the newspapers. Sorry to our first listener, but we have to talk about that. Trump says, well, we don't have subscriptions to the Washington Post and the New York Times anymore.
I'll bet.
Somehow he knows what's going on there. Yeah.
Enough to criticize them and criticize their coverage. So either he's not paying for the coverage of the news he's receiving, which he should be. He should be leading the nation.
Pay for the news. Pay for the news. I found a T-shirt. I was out in Iowa a few weeks ago, and I found a T-shirt in a shop that says exactly that. Great big letters on it. It says, pay for the news. I like to wear that. And I have a little button that says, America needs journalists. So these are cool things. If you like some good journalism paraphernalia, there's a shop called Ray Gun in Des Moines where you can get all kinds of cool stuff like that. All right. That's our commercial for the day. Alan Shartok is here. Thank you, Alan, for your hospitality, even a cup of coffee today. We're very grateful for that. You're welcome,
Rex. Oh, no, you're welcome.
Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. Thank you for joining us on The Media Project.
Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.